Welcome in, everybody. It is a Wednesday. That means it's time for Supernatural News and Parashare here on Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Right over across from me, as far as my computer is concerned, is our co-hostess today. She's intelligent. She's brilliant. She's, of course, much prettier than I am. And she's funny on top of it, ladies and gentlemen. She's an author as well. It's Jessica Freeberg. Hi, Jess.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. It is pouring out my window right now, so I'm just enjoying the beautiful torrential downpour.
Yeah, I've been trying to think of rain songs all day long. They did it on Care 11 tonight, but they got like the most boring rain songs you could have ever thought of, besides getting the obligatory Prince song in there. Which did you know Purple Rain was about the end of the world?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was about reuniting with the one you love at the end of the world.
Huh. I've been on this call with you for, 10 seconds? And you just taught me something new already.
There you go.
It's going to be a good night.
It's going to be a good night. Yeah, I knew that, of course, it's about wanting to see, you know, he says, I only want to see you happy in the purple rain. But you think, why would he want to see her happy? You know, because at the end of the movie, he gets back together with Apollonia. But
yeah.
But you're like, well, of course he wants to see her happy because he wants to be with her. But at the same time, you're like, well, wait a minute. Why does he want to see her happy? But you have to think back to 1999, where the theme of the main track was the fact that the world was ending.
Huh. I never put that together. That is blowing my mind right now.
Which was a common theme if you go all the way back to the Controversy album, which was the end of the world. That was a common theme in Prince's music all the way through the 80s.
Wild.
So, yeah. I just didn't think that that's what Purple Rain was about, but yeah. I guess it was. So there you go.
Fascinating stuff.
Yeah. And then, you know, we got into Raspberry Beret, which is about blowing your head off. No, I'm kidding. It wasn't.
No.
No. I'm just joking. I'm making up. Big show today, Jess. Big show today. Of course, we've got a lot of the usual suspects up today when I talk about topics. But we're also going to get a little bit into, I've got some time travel stuff today.
Oh, I love time travel.
Yeah. Speaking of, time traveling back to the 80s and talking about Prince and stuff like that. But we've got a couple of time travel stories that have popped up today. Plus, we have a special Parashare today from Michael Turner.
I can't wait for that.
Yeah. Now, I normally every week I tell you, you know, you can send in your emails by sending it to tim@darknessradio.com. You can send a voice note by going to darknessradioshow.com, clicking on that blue button, leaving a 2-minute voice note, and we'll play your lovely voice on the air. Michael went back to the good old days of theater of the mind, and he produced the whole darn thing. Sound effects,
what?
Music, and all. Yeah.
Michael, you rock star.
I know, right? Michael is a video production specialist, and he said, well, forgive me, Tim, audio's not normally my thing. Produced it up, sent it to me, and I said, you could have fooled me.
I can't wait. I'm super stoked.
Yeah, so I'm kind of eager to play it for you. So we'll play it after the break, and we'll do your nightmare fuel first, and then we'll jump into Michael's Parashare. We'll cleanse palate with that. But first, let's jump into things, shall we? And talk about a story a couple of you sent in to me this week. And the story itself, the headline itself, is a little confusing. When I first looked at this headline, I said, what exactly does this mean? But it had everything to do with, if I get this right, water trenches, UFOs, and Africa. I still struggle to read the headline here, but it's... In blaming everything on a software error, the fact that a UFO was blamed on a software error, but it had everything to do with trenches as well, Jess. I don't know. Let's read the story because after reading,
scratching my head.
Yeah, after reading it, I still kind of shrink and shirk and shrug my shoulders and go, I don't know if I quite understand this. Here's the gist of it. alien and conspiracy theorist showed up in full force last week after a weather modeling software error showed an anomaly the size of Texas moving up the African coastline while generating waves bigger than 80 feet high. So, do you have a weather anomaly or a UFO? We'll find out here. Ventusky is an application that presents weather and meteorological data to allow people to monitor developments anywhere in the world. According to the company's website, the app is available to anyone in the world and has the ability to illustrate movement of particles to show wind data and more. Now, last week, the application showed a cluster of waves reaching over 80 feet in height and spanning a distance wider than the state of Texas, and moving up from the Antarctica toward the coast of Africa for about 24 hours before disappearing. Okay, so to me, that says you've got a weather anomaly on your hands, yeah, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, I would think so, you know? Okay, so video of that weather pattern got the rumor mill going at that point, Jess, with people claiming that it was anything from a massive underwater sea creature to a spaceship under the sea. So that's how the rumors get rolling.
I like both options.
Sure, why not? Why not? At that point, X user at 528vibes posted the video, which garnered over 748,000 views, saying an anomaly moving underwater the size of Texas. Well, that'll get them stirred up. I know that much.
Oh, for sure.
With a length of about 801 miles and a width of 773 miles from its widest two points, Texas, according to worldatlas.com, has an area of about 268,000 square miles. That's a lot. As bizarre as some of the footage you're about to see in this video is, it's all real, he posted. Oh, now we got him whipped up. These are real-life encounters of something the viewer saw, recorded, and was unable to identify. By Sunday afternoon, the video was seen about 80,000 times, with followers debating what the massive black spot on the map was. Now, everyone knows Godzilla comes from the sea, one user wrote, so might as well throw it all in there, right? Another said, okay, who released the Kraken? Boy, this is
good
getting
one.
It's just getting ridiculous. Other followers said the mysterious matter could be H.P. Lovecraft's Cthulhu. I think I'm saying that right. I've always screwed up the name of that creature. Is it Cthulhu?
I think you nailed it.
Okay, sure. We'll go with it.
Oh, say it with conviction.
Yeah. Or even link the blob to a giant sea creature awoken by April 8th's solar eclipse.
Ooh, I like that theory. That's fun.
Now, we had some solar eclipse mentions yesterday. Not going to be the first time right here that we'll have that. We have a story at the end of the show today. It's kind of a cute little solar eclipse story we'll end today's program with. But others suggested that there may have been some sort of glitch with the software as the mass on the map moved over a major shipping channel and there was no report of large waves in the area by the seafarers. There's strike one.
Yeah.
If you have radio-to-radio contact with people in the area and they're okay,
Chances are
you got a little issue with, you know, with the software. I'm just saying it's probably the issue with the software. Let's see here. Now, at this point, the company added, Ventusky saw the buzz that the map created and quickly addressed the situation. They debunked the conspiracy floating in the ether. They said despite numerous reports of UFOs or Atlanteans launching from the ocean, yesterday's image of giant waves near Africa was due to a model error. The company then wrote, fortunately, our provider, the German Meteorological Institute at DWD_Pressy, has already resolved it, and the forecast is fine. So,
you know, it was really exciting for a minute.
Yeah, just put yourself at ease. There's no UFOs. There's no Godzilla. There's no Cthulhu. There's no, nothing like that. The company added that the model takes in copious amounts of data from ships and buoys throughout the ocean and problems can occur with such large databases. Now, still, it could take time to find out what caused the error this past week. So, you know, don't get after them too hard. They're learning. You know, it's a large scale model here, Jess. They're just finding things out for themselves.
Despite, give them a little grace.
That's right. A little grace, a little patience, a little love for the kids over there. Despite the company's attempts to defuse the situation, Sluice concluded, forcing Ventusky to try to prove their point once more. That's right. We're putting them through the ringer again, kids, because we're on X and we're ticked off. We're in our mom's basement and we didn't get the crust cut off our PB&J. A significant number of people still do not believe that the giant waves off Africa were just an error and prefer UFO theories, Ventusky wrote. You could tell, you could tell they were getting frustrated. What can we do as a visualization platform, they asked. Add more sources. Therefore, we are incorporating another wave model from a respected source, Mateo France. So they were going to go grab another model from somewhere else and say, hey, we'll show you, right?
Yeah. See, no monster, no UFO.
That's right. No monsters, no UFO. Ventusky CEO and founder David Prantl did not immediately respond to inquiries from Fox News Digital on the matter. They just want to prove, kids, that there's nothing out there that's going to, that's scary. There's nothing out there attacking us. Although I do thank the people who sent the story in to us. I think that got a giggle out of it.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. I would think that if those ripples in the ocean that were that big were anything substantial, it would have appeared on the U.S. Department of Defense's radar, and we would have probably had alerts on television like you wouldn't have believed. Every news media in the world would have been covering it, and you would have seen it on probably more than just Fox News Digital.
It would have been on the real Fox News at 9.
That's right. That's right, Jess. You got that right. All right, we move on. To this story here, that a baby alien was found in a Mexican cave by an explorer who dares not touch it without gloves.
Oh, the baby alien is too creepy to touch?
I don't think it's too creepy. I think we're handling it with kid gloves. I think that's the, you know, huh? Yeah. A Mexican explorer who discovered a baby alien hidden away in a cave sparks debate on Facebook after he revealed stunning picture of the fetus-like creature. Although this guy kind of looks like a black-eyed explorer. Take a look at this.
Yeah, he does. What's wrong with his eyes?
I don't know. He's a creepy-looking guy himself. If I were a baby alien, I'd probably scream and not want him to touch me.
Yeah, no doubt. Like, if right. It was him or the baby alien, I'd take the baby alien. He is definitely creepy.
Right, every time. Every single
those
time.
Eyes.
Yeah, he is a creepy one. A Mexican explorer may have just made his most stunning discovery to date with his latest find hidden inside a cave. Ed Servavencia from Monterrey, Mexico, was out on one of his usual explorations of the Cerro de las Mitras when he discovered a baby alien well hidden inside a cave. Speaking about his strange discovery, Edu said, I was well hidden in the cave. It was dark and it was very dirty, and I didn't think about it too much in that moment. I now keep it in a box, and I don't dare touch it without gloves.
He kept it in a box?
Maybe it's a well-bedded box. I've no idea. Maybe you put a little newspaper in it, and you put a little, I don't know, little treats in it. I don't know. What do you feed an alien?
There has to be rules against that. I mean, like, you're not even supposed to keep a baby bird if it falls out of a tree. You're supposed to turn that in.
Yeah, true. You know? Yeah, yeah.
You can't just keep an alien.
Although, you know, we had a bird, we named her Beatrice, and she had a broken wing and a broken foot, and she couldn't fly, and so we made her a little bed. We didn't touch her. We made her a little bed out there in the mulch because she wasn't able to really do anything. She tried to keep up with the other birds, but we tried to make her as comfortable as possible, and she kind of made her home out there by the feed, you know.
That's sweet.
Yeah, but she didn't live too long. She only lived about 2 weeks.
Oh, that's a sad story, Tim. Why'd you tell me that? No, I'm going to cry.
Well, no, don't cry. I mean, it was just, you know, she wouldn't have lived more than probably a day or two had we not, you know, helped her along. But she kind of did herself in. I don't know if you want to hear that story or not.
No, I don't.
Okay, all right. It was a, it was kind of a hotty-cotty situation. It was,
yeah, can give me monsters and ghosts and all those. Just don't give me sad stories about dying baby birds. That's too much.
Well, maybe it's a story of inspiration because she really thought she could go hunt worms for herself and she accidentally broke her own neck.
I like her spunk. Oh, my gosh.
It's a story of inspiration, Jess. It was.
I said, don't tell me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, well, now I'm going to give you nightmares. I didn't mean to, but I was like, there she goes. Go, Beatrice. Go, Beatrice. No, don't go, Beatrice. And then there she went off to her maker.
That is awful.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, we are a paranormal program. I mean, you know. after sharing his discovery on Facebook, Adu's post received more than 2,000 comments. Probably put the baby alien back, you some bitch.
And where are your eyes?
Yeah, and what happened to your eyes? Oh
your
my
eyes
God.
Look like hollow sockets of horror.
Look at that. That's
oh my gosh.
That's the baby pudding alien, as I like to.
I don't even have words right now. This is shocking.
What do you name this thing? Pudding? Oatmeal? What do you name the baby alien when you see it, Jess?
Pudding works just fine. It's terrifying.
Cement? What'd you name it? Cement?
Oh, man.
It's not the cutest thing in the world.
It's so bad.
Yeah. Do you think he made that thing out of lumpy?
There's no way that's real.
Lumpy oatmeal and popsicle sticks? Is that what it looks like?
Oh my gosh, now that you say that.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Maybe.
He made it out of chicken bones and lumpy oatmeal. Look at it.
It's like a kid's art project gone wrong. It's like what my kids used to bring home from school and be like, Happy Mother's Day. And now, I'd be like, what?
Don't say that too loud. The kids are in the other room.
Oh, my gosh.
Are you saying this is what Brielle used to bring you home for Mother's Day?
Yeah, something similar. Yeah. With her little name carved in the bottom.
Oh, my God. Love. Happy Mother's Day. Love, Brielle. By the way, this is chicken bones and oatmeal. This is like baby chicken with an oatmeal head on it. Look it.
Yeah, it's something else. Okay, so he just took it home and put it in a box. I just can't get over that. Like, shouldn't you try to have it authenticated or something? Find a scientist.
I guess.
I don't know.
I wouldn't.
You call when you find an alien.
The minute you bring it to any scientist, he's going to try and break it apart and eat dinner. I mean, it's just, it looks like a chicken.
It does. It definitely looks like a chicken.
You'd be like, oh, you brought me KFC. Yeah. I don't
you
know
bring
what
me those mashed potatoes and gravy.
Yeah, you
that's part of KFC.
You bring me no sides. You're no good, man. Eh? The intrigued Facebook users didn't hold back on their thoughts and theories, with one user exclaiming, "It's the body of a goblin." The second added, "I don't want to look at it anymore. It makes me scared. I would never have touched it. How have you? I don't know what that means." Meanwhile, a third simply commented, "It's a baby alien."
Ding, ding, ding.
That person must be surprised at everything. Like they go into the kitchen. It's a broom in the corner. I don't know. Adu's mysterious discovery has been compared to. This can't be right. Urologist Jamie Masson. Oh, yeah, he is a urologist. Jamie Masson's mummified finds that he presented to Congress in Mexico last September, the ones that Bruiser kept saying look like cake.
You know,
those mummies. The corpses that were found near the Nazca lines in Peru have been met with such skepticism from scientists who have labeled them fakes. Well, they ain't going to like this one either. I'm going to tell you that right now. No. Bring it to the same scientists and they'll probably put it next to the cake aliens. Then you'll have dinner along with dessert. Just saying. Yeah. The mummy aliens from Peru are said to be seen on camera for the first time, with independent experts hoping to say one way or another whether the mummies are alien life forms in a new TV documentary. Well, this should be good. The producer for the show, Serena DC, has been left angered after previous investigations into the bodies haven't been held in public, saying it is now time for the world to know the truth. Her independent experts will perform autopsies and medical scans in a bid to discover exactly what they are. Well, I say put the little oatmeal chicken alien up with it, and let's get it all done in one shot.
Yeah, let's just get an answer here.
Yeah, because we can't continue on like this. It's you can't keep finding things in caves in Mexico and not get answers on the whole shebang.
And just keep those things in a box under your bed.
Or can you? I mean, that's the question. Yeah, I mean,
I guess you can.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you got valuable stuff in Mexico, where else are you going to keep it? You're not going to take it to the bank. I mean, you know, they got corrupt politicians and bankers in Mexico, don't they?
That's true. You don't want to take your baby alien to the bank and have someone steal it.
Yeah, you can't put it in a safe deposit box. You got to keep it under your bed. Just don't put it in between your mattresses, because you'll crunch the poor little baby alien. There'll be nothing. So you gotta put them under the bed. Yeah.
Like Princess and the Pea. Can you sleep with a baby alien under your mattress?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just like that, yeah. Wow, that's a reference. You're expecting our audience to be somewhat literate here, Jess.
They're going to know. Yeah. They're going to know that one. Trust me.
You're going to have a bunch of people Googling Princess and the Pea. I'm just saying. Let's move on, shall we? Oh, we're going to do our first time travel story today.
Yes.
Yeah, we're shaking.
Where are we going?
We're shaking it up. Well, into time, of course, because it's time travel.
Back in time or forward in time?
Well, a little of both. We're going to go back in time first. Five of the most bizarre proofs of time travel in historic paintings is what we're talking about. From iPhones and paintings to trainers.
Interesting.
Yeah. I always love the, that's an iPhone in a painting, or that's an iPhone in a photo, because there are things that we now have as that we see as iPhones that maybe 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago, we would have never looked at it as such because it didn't exist. Right.
Right. Right. Yeah.
It says here in the article, what did Marty McFly, Doctor Who, and a painting from the 17th century all have in common? Well, they all feature time travelers, potentially, as a new Disney Plus movie called The Greatest Hits features time traveler Lucy Boynton. The film is by no means the first fictional character to return to the past. But what about evidence of a real-life time travel? Well, there are plenty of mysterious cases from history of reported glitches in the fabric of time. From Liverpool's famous Bold Street time slips to bizarre paintings and photographs featuring apparent time travelers. These images depict all kinds of clues that eagle-eyed viewers have pointed to, suggesting their subjects may be from a different era, with evidence of smartphones and Nike trainers. Now, here's what I'm going to do. I'm actually going to post the link to this particular article so you can follow along and see what we're seeing as we talk about it. First movie we're talking about has to do with, I believe, a Charlie Chaplin movie from 1928. It's a still from there that they say proves time travel is real, as a woman is spotted with a mobile phone. It says here that even the most seasoned pilot is no fan of gliding through the skies in dodgy weather, but for RAF Air Marshal Sir Robert Victor Goddard, it was more than turbulence he came across in 1939. The senior commander during World War II went across a disused Air Force base in the village of Drem, East Lothian, and noted it was in a rough state with cows eating grass, which had grown through the cracks in the tarmac. After heavy rain set him off course, he chose to go back in the direction of the base to regain focus. Looking down, he found a renovated airfield with mechanics wearing blue overalls and four yellow planes on the runway, including a model he had never seen before. It was thought Goddard had been in a time slip, as 4 years later, the airfield was up and running with RAF training planes, now painted yellow instead of silver, and Air Force mechanics swapping their tan overalls for blue. Interesting.
Yeah, I believe in that. I mean, I think there's a lot of instances of that happening. So I'm a firm believer.
Yeah. The picture I was talking about before that particular bit was a woman holding what appeared to be a mobile phone to her ear in the background of Charlie Chaplin's 1928 movie, The Circus. It caused a time travel riddle. Now, the Daily Star reports that devices were not commonplace until about 50 years later. Meanwhile, a 1930s photo also appears to show a man holding a mobile to his ear in the middle of Union Square in New York, an artwork by Dutch painter Pieter de Hooch. What a name. From 1670, seemingly showed a man from the past holding an iPhone. Here's the picture from the 1930s. Let me get rid of that ad there. Of the man holding what looks like a cell phone. If you can see it.
Okay.
I'm going to try and give enough space here so you can see. Can you see the man?
Yes.
Holding the phone. Okay.
Yeah. Up to his ear.
Yeah. Up to his ear. Now.
Totally looks like it.
I present to you a couple of different scenarios. Now, it is a common misconception that there were not cell phones at that time. There were some wireless devices, and it was known that the name of the inventor is, was it Tesla that was working on the wireless device? I'm trying to think now. My history is escaping me. Somebody was working on the wireless device at the time, and it was Motorola, I believe, that had the patent on it back in 1917, was it? Someone's going to correct me here on an email. I know they are. But the patent goes all the way back to 1917. It was not in wide use at the time, and you couldn't call anybody, obviously, because not a lot of people had these receivers. It was only being used in labs. But it's the guy in this photo looks strangely like, it doesn't really look like he's dressed like the others. This is more modern dress. He looks like he's dressed almost like he's dressed from the 60s or 70s or maybe even 80s.
Yeah, he looks completely out of place.
He does. So that might potentially be a time slip from the photograph that we're talking about from the 30s. The one from Charlie Chaplin, the Charlie Chaplin still, and I have that one here, could potentially be a hearing aid. Now, that's the other thing. There were hearing aids that you actually had to hold up to your ear.
Oh.
See what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
In order to hear. It was like, it wasn't a full horn, but it was something similar where you actually had to hold it up to your ear to hear. Now, she could have been using that. But see, to me, if you look above her and to the left, it almost looks like there might be a payphone sitting there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you see that?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know that that's a cell phone she's talking into. She may be standing at a payphone.
That one's a bit more of a stretch for me. But the other one, the first one that you showed me, that does really look like a time slip.
Yeah, that does, doesn't it? So that is that one right there. Now, our next one is the future mapped out. Waiting to go through passport control at the airport is always painful, but imagine what would happen if, as they went to place a stamp, immigration officers told you the country yours was issued from didn't exist.
Wow.
Okay. In July of 1954, it said a man arriving at Tokyo International Airport found himself in exactly this situation, leading police to arrest him. He claimed his hometown, Torrid, was between France and Spain. It was over 1,000 years old. Just the area he pointed to on the map was actually Andorra.
Wow.
Yeah. Despite two guards outside his hotel room, the mystery man had disappeared by the next day.
Oh, he slipped back into the right time.
Right. So he might have gone into a different timeline.
Oh, I like that story. That is super cool.
Yeah. Now, the next one. The painting Portrait of a Boy by Dutch master Ferdinand Boll left art fans baffled as the 17th century child appeared to be wearing shoes with a famous Nike white tick. despite being painted more than 300 years before Nike kicked their trainer making into action in 1964. It saw conspiracy theorists question whether the lad, thought to be Frederick Sliskin, I believe, the second cousin of the painter's wife, had hopped into the future for his footwear. And we'll show you here, Jess, what exactly we're talking about. So here is the painting, and then the painting close up on the right.
Oh my gosh.
Do you see Do you see the Nike tick there on his shoes?
Yes.
Isn't that something?
The little swoosh.
Yeah, a little swoosh right there. Isn't that something, huh? So did Nike go back in time just to get a little bit of a trademark thrown in there? And finally, a little bit of a clock hop. Former U.S. Army helicopter pilot Alex Collier claims to have traveled through time after being abducted by aliens in the 1980s. He said he was kept on their spaceship for 3 months and given a belt to wear so they could hear his thoughts. And when he returned to Earth, he had only been gone for 18 minutes.
What?
Yeah. At a 2007 talk in Japan, Alex said, "Their own day is equivalent to 31 days on our world. They thought I wasn't well because I kept having to take naps."
Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
Yeah. How's that for a story?
I like it.
That's bizarre. One of their days is equivalent to 31 days on our world.
They thought he was sick.
They thought he was sick.
Guy's always napping.
The guy's always falling asleep. What the heck's wrong
with him? Oh, boy. Think of how much we could get done there, though, if we just went there for, you know, and their days are more than ours. I could probably maybe get half a book written.
Right?
One day.
Imagine how many podcasts you could make.
Yeah.
Yeah. You would bore people to tears. I'm just saying. And finally, before we go to break here, Avi Loeb is back in the news, and he's risking his reputation now to search for aliens. If you remember, he was looking for the remnants of Oumuamua on the bottom of the ocean, and he claims he found it, right? He had that. He said he had all the proof he needed at the bottom of the ocean. Now tech tycoons are bankrolling his quest. And here's how it goes. Harvard astrophysicist Avi Loeb thinks it's time for the scientific community to get over its bias against UFOs. In the past few years, a renegade professor has set the astrophysics world on fire by claiming that it was reasonable to suggest extraterrestrial intelligence was behind two recent discoveries. Several of Loeb's peers are galled. They say he's overreaching, repeating the axiom that an extraordinary claim requires extraordinary evidence. Loeb is on a mission to find aliens. He believes he sees something in the data hundreds of experts don't, and he wants to make you believe it too, said Stephen Desch, an astrophysicist at Arizona State University. I don't think they're so much an academic place as they are a party place, aren't they, Arizona State University?
I have definitely heard that before, yes.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm believing an astrophysicist from Arizona State University, but anywho. Loeb argues that while we haven't yet found any evidence of aliens, this may be precisely because scientists have been so reluctant to look for them. Loeb says, obviously, they will never have extraordinary evidence if they're not seeking it. The question of whether we are alone and whether we actually have a partner out there, a neighbor, is perhaps the most fundamental in science. While Loeb's claims and camera-ready charm have grated on some in academia, they amassed for him a loving and growing fan base outside the ivory tower. His work is the subject of an upcoming Netflix documentary. There is also an upcoming off-Broadway show about his life. Well, that ought to be interesting, in which he plans to star.
Oh, wow. He's very versatile. He's a scientist and academic and an actor. I hope there's dancing and singing in this show.
Can you imagine a musical about an astrophysicist?
No.
No. There might be I see a Saturday Night Live skit coming. I really do. Among his most avid fans are wealthy tech tycoons who see him as one of them, a disruptor. And they are the ones bankrolling perhaps Loeb's most ambitious work to date, It's the Galileo Project. We've talked about the Galileo Project in the past on this program. It's a research program devoted to seeking the extraordinary evidence that we are not alone. Charles Hoskinson, who is a cryptocurrency magnate and mathematician, said, "I do believe he steps a little bit too far, but this boundary pushing is exactly why he's backed Loeb's research." That's what you take when you take a very passionate, very aggressive type, a personality that's constantly working and thinking and who wants to be right. You have to accept that every now and then they're just going to make bold statements. For most of Loeb's nearly 40-year career in astrophysics, aliens were far from his orbit of influence. For decades, he published theoretical works about black holes, exoplanets, and other cosmic events, which drew acclaim from distinguished astrophysicists and brought him prestigious appointments, including a professorship at Harvard and an advisory role with Breakthrough Initiatives, a space research body with links to Mark Zuckerberg and the late Stephen Hawking. Then in 2017, a strange object was discovered floating in our solar system, and what Loeb postulated about where it came from rocked the world of astrophysics. Scientists at the University of Hawaii spotted Oumuamua, which is a quarter-mile-long object wandering around the Milky Way. It was the first time that scientists recognized an object from interstellar space visiting the solar system. The discovery was revolutionary, but also puzzling. Oumuamua had a very unique and unusual shape and didn't have the dust, ice, or characteristic tail of a comet, but it did speed up as it left the solar system, which is typical of a comet, and physicists were stumped. The more data we got about it, the less familiar it looked, said Loeb. A range of explanations emerged. Desch and his colleagues suggested that Oumuamua was a piece of a Pluto-like planet. Another team postulated that the object was a new type of comet, sporting an invisible tail and made of vaporized hydrogen. Loeb disagrees with this interpretation and has explained his arguments in peer-reviewed published articles. For him, the hypothesis served as serious examination. What if Oumuamua was actually the first example of alien tech spotted in our solar system? Maybe the object was a piece of a solar sail from an extraterrestrial spacecraft. It's not a conclusion, it's more of a let's imagine what's possible and allow it. Not dismiss it ahead of time, said Loeb. Loeb's theory has been picked up by international media and quickly drew criticism from his peers. Academic convention dictates scientists support their theories with a solid basis of evidence. Many consider it good practice to discuss and validate these kind of ideas with peers before sharing them widely. Several quickly spoke up to debunk the idea that Oumuamua could be technological in origin. This unfortunately created a bit of a schism in the astrophysics community, said Hoskinson. He went from one of the most respected, highly cited, and loved astrophysicists to people alleging that he was hurting astronomy, Hoskins went on to say. Rather than recant, Loeb decided he would seek more evidence of extraterrestrial intelligence. I wrote more than 1,000 papers in theoretical astrophysics, he went on to say. As I got older, I realized that it's more important to pay attention to evidence than to opinion and theoretical ideas, he said. In 2021, he announced that he had secured $1.75 million in funding to launch the Galileo Project, an institute devoted to seeking signs of extraterrestrial technology on and near our planet. So, Jess, here's the deal. He's going to be looking for aliens in our backyard with the Galileo Project.
I hope he finds them.
I hope he does, too. It's a broad chance he's taking. He's taking big steps with big money, and there's a lot of chance for egg on your face with it. But that's the kind of guy he is.
That's the risk you take, and I'm glad that someone's taking the risk.
That's right. So there you go. And there's more to hear from Avi Loeb. And there should be more people like that in the scientific community that are willing to take chances and not necessarily kind of sit on their duffs and wait for things to come to them.
He's my kind of guy.
There you go. We're going to take our break. When we come back, we talk about how fragile the banking system is at times when we're talking about the real world and the fact that interest rates are now about to go up yet again because Inflation is not being controlled. With that in mind, how would you like a serving of AI when you go to the bank?
No, you know how I feel about AI, Timmy.
It turns out that AI is being used now by the banks to serve you at the customer level. We'll talk about that when we get back. Plus, we got some AI dating stuff, but we've got plenty of ghost stuff as well when we come back.
All right.
Lots of ghost stories when we come back from break, including, if you're ready for this, Jess, including one story I find unusual. A ghost is furious that a couple has flipped their house for profit.
Oh, an angry ghost.
You gotta love it. They're angry that there's actually profit being taken out of a house. So we'll talk about that. And we've got other ghost stories as well. And we've got one more time travel story. And after the AI, we've got a Parashare story that you are going to enjoy. It'll bring you back to the old days of Theater of the Mind. So
can't wait.
It's all coming up. It's a Supernatural News and Parashare Wednesday right here on the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio on a Wednesday. It's a Supernatural News Wednesday and Parashare. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Right over there is Jessica Freeberg. Jess?
Yes.
Pretty good show so far, right?
I'm loving it.
Yeah, we're all happy. We're all bright. We're all shiny and new. We're waiting for the ghost stories. We got Theater of the Mind coming up.
So excited.
Yeah, a little bit of Parashare / Theater of the Mind due to our friend Michael Turner coming up with a brand new story, which you guys, I can't wait to play it for you guys. It's really, really good. So lots of good things on the horizon, but first...
Oh, no.
We got to get a little nightmare fuel in. It's already scary enough dealing with banks.
True.
And financial institutions. And everything else having to do with money. AI is poised to replace entry-level positions at large financial institutions. It turns out that financial services firms such as Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley are quietly testing AI tools that could leave CIOs delivering IT services to more service bots and fewer employees. Yikes. Global banks and investment firms are currently milling plans to place entry-level financial analyst positions with artificial intelligence. Oh, this can't go good.
This is bad.
With as many as two-thirds of these positions potentially on the chopping block. This anticipated move could completely transform how these companies hire new employees and how they manage to deliver the technology that employees use. Major financial services organizations such as Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley are testing AI tools that could one day largely replace junior analysts. And the hours of time they put compiling and interpreting reports and crunching numbers and statistics, work that generative AI tools can do in a matter of seconds. That according to a New York Times report. Large banking firms are quietly testing AI tools under codenames such as Socrates, or Socrates, if you believe Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, that could one day make the need to hire thousands of college graduates at these firms obsolete. Oh, come on, give the kids a job.
This is so sad.
Yeah. Indeed, Goldman Sachs has estimated that around 300 million workers could be significantly impacted by AI, and financial services companies appear to be moving in the direction to make this prediction a reality. Financial services organizations already use many kinds of automation technologies, from venerable workload automation tools to basic job schedulers, each used by around half of all organizations, to more modern ones, such as intelligent document processing or intelligent process automation using AI. And it's used by 27 to 33% respectively. That according to SMA Technologies report, the State of Automation in Financial Services 2024. One of the key reasons why AI may disrupt entry-level financial services positions is its potential to automate the information processing that comprises a large portion of their job description. Moreover, many of these employees experience burnout due to the long hours and grunt work that these positions entail, making it a less attractive option for college graduates, despite the significant salaries offered. Do you buy that?
I'm really bummed out by it, though, because I have a son who's majoring in economics because he wants to work in finance.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, those are younger kids with energy and get up and go, and they want to get into that field. And it's called paying your dues.
Yeah. What are they going to do now to get the higher up positions? They're not going to have any work experience.
That's right. Let them pay their dues.
Let them crunch the numbers. Let them do the grunt work.
That's right. Let them do that grunt work. Now, representatives from Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Chase, and Morgan Stanley didn't immediately respond to requests for comments, of course, on their company's plans to implement AI or its potential to change the hiring strategies. You know, they always say when you automate in one place, there becomes a job for a live human elsewhere.
Yeah.
But we're running out of places for live humans.
Yeah, we really are. And I know when it first came out, everyone said, oh, it's not going to take away your jobs. It's just going to make your jobs easier. But we're seeing it's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. So it's kind of scary. Kind of scary. That's for sure. Meanwhile, speaking of kind of scary, Jess, the world's first AI beauty pageant with completely fake models is set to be like the Oscars.
Oh, man.
I don't know who's watching this thing, but somebody must be. The FanView World AI Creator Awards, or the WAICAs, the WACAs, will see computer-created models judged on their beauty, technicalities, and social media clout.
Oh, they're not real.
I think that's the idea. ChatGPT and robots taking over the world may be the first things that spring to mind when thinking of artificial intelligence, but a social media platform has now launched the world's first AI beauty pageant, where entirely fake models will compete for a chance to win a total prize fund worth $20,000.
Who gets it?
I think the person who creates the AI model.
Oh. I think maybe we should enter this pageant.
I was going to say, I think we got a future
having
job.
Having to change of
heart. Yeah. The futuristic FanView World AI Creator Awards, or WACAs, we'll see computer-generated figures judged on their beauty, technicalities, and social media clout in an online event taking place next month. Albeit slightly dystopian, creators say the ceremony may be the tech world's Oscars at a time when 10,000 AI models are taking the internet by storm. 10,000, Jess.
I don't like where this world is heading.
I gotta tell you a story when we get to the end of this story. The creator economy is an extremely exciting place to be in right now. This is a quote. And with the help of our platform, there's been exponential growth in AI creators entering the space, growing their fan bases and monetizing content, said Will Monange, co-founder of the competition partner FanView. Miss AI is just one award as part of the program. And we share the vision for the WACAs to become the Oscars of the AI creator economy. FanView is currently the leading social media platform for AI-generated content creators, with this economy expected to exceed the $1 billion mark, that's right, folks, in 2024, this year. Judging its competition are two internet-famous computerized models, Emily Pellegrini and I believe this is Atiana Lopez, who both went viral last year, as many were stunned by their entirely lifelike appearances. That's right, they are fake models. Lord Alan Sugar's PR advisor Andrew Block and Britain's only pageant historian Sally Ann Fawcett will sit alongside them too. Sally Ann has also been head judge of Miss Great Britain for the past 10 years, with Miss AI now an unexpected turn in her career. As one of the world's only traditional pageantry historians, it's really exciting to be involved as an awards or in an awards, which feels so futuristic, she said. It's been a fast learning curve, expanding my knowledge on AI creators, and it's quite incredible what is possible. Interestingly, there's so many parallels between real-life pageantry contestants and AI creators and how they engage with their audiences. I can't wait to assess the entrants along with the other judges. Okay, so I'm going to show you a picture of Emily Pellegrini. You tell me, can you tell the difference between her and an AI model?
No.
She's
in that is the AI model.
That is the AI model.
She looks like a real person. And this is so creepy to me. Like, this is only happening because society is fueling it. Like, if they weren't making money off of this and getting people to like and share and follow and all that kind of stuff, none of this would be happening. What is wrong with us as a society? That's so weird.
I don't know. There's a bit of a disturbing quote at the end of this story. There's a women's health speaker, Danae Mercer Ricci, who recently wrote on Instagram, "Lately, AI girls have appeared across social media. They're young, they're very pretty, and they're doing real things like going to the gym or traveling to beautiful islands. This isn't real. My generation had to navigate models and magazines. Our kids are going to have to compete with computer-created perfection across their social platforms. I don't know how to solve this, but I do know we need to be informed."
Yes, I was literally thinking that before you read that, because I pulled her up on my phone and I'm looking at her, and it's such an unattainable body. And this is what our, as a society, we're saying is beautiful. I feel bad for the girls growing up in this society where this is what they're being judged against. I don't like it at all. But now I double hate AI.
But then so let's play devil's advocate for a second. You look at the movie Barbie and what Barbie was to girls of the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Yeah.
And you say, well, Barbie was an impossible beauty standard. You were telling little girls that they had to be like Barbie.
Plastic. She's so fake. Like, this looks so real. If I didn't know that Emily Pellegrini was not a real person, there's no indication on here saying that she's an AI generated, I would just be scrolling through my Instagram and I would see this beautiful woman and be like, wow, she's beautiful. And then I'd look in the mirror at myself and be like, huh, I got a lot of work on. Well, I need implants everywhere, butt, boobs, all of it. Like,
and that's the thing. I mean, I think we put that pressure on women more than we do guys. Guys, we look at somebody like, I don't know who the modern day guy would be, but I mean, back when we were kids, you looked at somebody like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you look at somebody like Sylvester Stallone back in the 80s. You went, wow, that's an impressive body, or Hulk Hogan or whoever. And you thought, that's an impressive body, but you were in no rush to get that way as far as a guy went.
Yeah.
You know, you thought, okay, that's a great looking guy. And then you slam burgers and chips in your face. Because it wasn't that there was zero pressure to look that way. You wanted to look that way.
Yeah. But you knew it was like, one in a million people look that way, right?
Yes.
Where I think, like, okay, if we're going to have this weird AI model stuff going on, every single post that features one should be clearly indicated that it's not real.
Yeah.
Just so we know, you know, so that we're not like seeing fake humans and then judging ourselves against them. I mean, I don't, because I'm an older, middle-aged woman, and you get to a point where you don't care, but I've got two girls and they're friends. Like, you know, they kind of judge themselves based on what they're seeing on social media. And I already think it's, you know, difficult with filters and all that kind of stuff where there's just so much fakeness out there. How do we teach our kids to be real?
The thing that was so disturbing that I saw recently that I guess I kind of railed, this is what really got me railing against the entire thing, was it's probably a few weeks before WrestleMania. The internet wrestling community, they do these little AI tributes to their favorite women wrestlers, but they do it without, you know, sans clothing, so they're all in bikinis, right?
Okay, yeah.
One of them did one of Bayley in a bikini, but I mean, she had a pretty good looking body, right? But she was thinner than what she is now. Now Bayley's gained, not judging her at all, but she's gained quite a bit of weight since she was, you know, obviously since she was 18 years old. She started with WWE when she was 18.
Yeah.
And now she's in her 30s. But somebody had taken Bayley at 23, 24 years old and given her that body back and put her at an impossible standard and put her in a bikini. And everybody's like, wow, that's a really great shot of Bayley. She looks really good. No, that's an AI version of Bayley.
Yeah.
So now you're putting that out there, and you got to know Bayley's seen it.
Right.
And how does that make her feel?
Probably terrible. There's just not going to be enough therapy. We need more therapists, obviously, because we're just messing people up with this stuff. And it just keeps getting worse and worse. And we're going to have so many people with like body dysmorphia and, you know, multiple disorders. Like, there's just going to be so much wrong. People, they can't achieve what we're putting in front of them, and it's not right.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
You know, we want so desperately to have that perfection, and it's so ridiculous because we're all human. There's no such thing as human and perfect in the same sentence.
No,
there's no such thing as the perfect human. You can't have it. To be human is to be flawed.
That's right.
And the thing you love the most about the humans around you is those flaws. Those flaws give us character, and character is what makes us beautiful. And it's just funny that people are using technology to try to cover up what they think is these flaws.
Yeah.
And you know, if you really, you acquire this wisdom too, as you get older, as to what is truly beautiful. You know, we think of beauty in the sense of youth, but when you, as you get older, you start to see the beauty in all, you know, and you really begin to see what is beautiful and what is pretty. There's a difference between pretty and beautiful, right? So it begins a futile exercise or a futile dance of what it is we're doing. What are we trying to cover up? Why are you trying to cover it up? And it gets a little sickening after a while. It really does. So I don't know. That's my soapbox, and I'm getting off of it.
I was right on it with you there.
I hear you. You know what? We got a parachute today. From Michael Turner.
Yay! I am so excited about this.
So Michael Turner writes me, Jess, and says, well, Tim, I have this experience that I actually had, and I'm thinking, oh, great, he sent me an email, right? He said, well, I put it into audio form for you. And I'm thinking, oh, well, he just kind of told me this story.
Yeah.
Then I play it, and it's fully produced.
You don't have to do anything.
I don't have to do a thing. And it's like the old theater of the mind. So you know what? We're just going to sit back and enjoy it. So ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, this is Michael Turner.
The story takes place in 2003. My friends and I were amateur ghost hunters. We were always looking for the new scariest place to investigate. I was working for a ghost tour at the time, and I was always talking to members of my tours about their stories and looking for something new to investigate. One day, I had somebody tell me a story about this cemetery in a tiny, small, 1-mile-long town in the middle of nowhere. The story was the cemetery had a very angry spirit. You could see, hear, and sometimes even be touched by it. For me, that's all I needed to hear. I had always wanted to be touched by something I couldn't see. So a small group of us decided to take the drive 3 hours to the middle of nowhere to find this cemetery and investigate. We managed to find the town, but the cemetery was practically impossible to find. Luckily, there was a gas station open at the time, and we managed to ask for directions to it. We eventually found the cemetery, and it didn't disappoint. It was rather large for the size of the small town that it was located in. It had a surprising number of trees for a cemetery. The tree canopy was blocking out most of the moonlight that night, making the cemetery especially dark. As we exited the car looking around, we noticed a small trailer in one of the corners of the cemetery. It had signs posted on it that said,
"After sunset, trespassers will be shot."
We weren't going to let something like that stop us, so we just opted not to use flashlights in order not to get caught. Since the information we had was rather vague, and the cemetery was so large, we decided to split up into two teams to investigate. So two of us went one direction, and the other three went the other. So my friend and I walked to the cemetery, hoping to hear or see something. We eventually found the edge of the cemetery that opened up to a small pond. At this point, we hadn't heard or seen anything, so we radioed to the others to see if they had any luck. Unfortunately, they hadn't heard or seen anything either. While trying to decide our next steps, a breeze blew through by the pond. In the breeze, I could have swore I heard something, but I thought it was just my friend since my back was to him at the time. So I turned to him and I said, "Dude, quit playing around." He turned around and looked at me and said, "I didn't say anything." As soon as those words left his mouth, we both heard a faint. We both stood there shocked looking at each other and said, "Did you hear that?" We immediately radioed the others.
"Hey, where are you guys at? Looks like we're approaching the end of the cemetery. Why? Stop what you're doing and head our direction."
After a few minutes of walking our direction, they radioed us back.
"Oh my god. Do you guys hear that?"
Once they reached us by the pond, we all started trying to follow the sound together. As we followed the cries, they grew louder and louder.
"Help me."
They led us to a darkened alcove at the edge of the cemetery surrounded by an orange grove. Once we reached it, the cries stopped. I will never forget the feeling this place had. The only way we could describe it was we felt like something's prey. But we shook it off and started trying to communicate. "Hello? Is somebody there? Do you need help?" After several minutes of trying and getting no responses, we saw what looked like a dark, human-shaped mass move within the alcove. To make sure our eyes weren't playing tricks on us, we got out our night vision camcorder. We all stood frozen, huddled around the small, glowing screen. After a few minutes, it happened again. A human apparition passing in the orange groves. We all saw it and jumped. So we tried to regain our composure, and as we did, the cry started again from the alcove. At this point, everyone's looking at me going, "Okay, you want to get touched by something? Here's your chance." Now, I would be lying to you if I said I wasn't terrified. I've heard disembodied voices, seen apparitions, but never this clear. Every ounce of my being told me this is not the time or the place. We stood by those orange groves another 15 or 20 minutes. Eventually, I told everyone I wasn't going in there and it was time to go. Looking back on it, I'm glad I listened to my gut because to this day, I still don't know if it was a human spirit or something else.
All right. Well, thanks much, Michael, for sending that in. I know this much. That spirit only knew two words.
Help me.
That's for sure. But yeah, thank you so much, Michael. If you want to send in your parashare, you can do it three ways now. Again, You can email me your story. I'll read it here on air, tim@darknessradio.com. You can send us your lovely voice by clicking on that blue button at darknessradioshow.com. You have 2 minutes to do so. If you need more time, just click on the blue button again. Keep doing it over, over, over again. Rinse, repeat, and I'll stitch them together or do like Michael did.
Dang, he really set the bar, though. Michael, yeah. Kudos.
The gauntlet has been thrown down.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, so there you go. Good job there, Michael. Appreciate it. All right, Jess, we have a story here that says that a ghost is furious. We've flipped our house for profit, and the photos don't lie.
And they're not getting any of it. That's what they're mad about.
That's right. The ghost wants at least 30%. After purchasing a house with the view of flipping and making some easy cash, a couple was left spooked after noticing strange black masses in their photos, with many convinced it's the ghost of the previous owner. Maybe it was the person who built the house. Discovering black masses haunting their renovation snaps, Mandy Corns was left feeling panicked and sick when she scrolled through the images taken of her and her husband Donald Corns' investment purchase. The spooky pictures appear to show a large black mass emerging from the floor in the undecorated home's master bedroom, and others on the living room's roof and another's bedroom's walls. The 52-year-old says she felt a bad energy in the three-bedroom home before she took the pictures and is convinced she's captured something paranormal. The scared customer service worker, who usually helps Donald with their renovation projects, admits she only visited the property 3 times in the 6 months that they worked on it. Well, that's kind of chickening out, isn't it?
Yeah. Not really pulling your own weight there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you should probably put some more elbow grease into the thing. Mandy has wondered if a ghost was annoyed that they bought the home for $30,000 with a vision of spending around $30,000 to renovate it and sell it for quick profit. $30,000? How do you get a house for $30,000 unless it's
where is this house?
Unless it's on the auction block. She posted the pictures to Facebook in February, as they've bothered her ever since they were taken in 2017. Okay, they bought it in 2017. And admits she regrets ever seeing them. Where is this house, though?
Honestly, I couldn't buy a porta potty for $30,000.
It's in North Carolina, it looks like. But still.
Crazy.
North Carolina. Many social media users were quick to agree that they, too, get a panicked feeling when looking at the spooky pictures. Mandy, who claims a mom died in the house, has brushed off claims the dark masses are a mobile phone fault, as images from elsewhere in the house do not contain the same black masses. Mandy from Madison, North Carolina, said, "I was snapping pics of every room, so when I got home and looked at them, I thought, oh my God, I had chills from head to toe and got a panicked and sick feeling. The one coming out of the floor was so intensely dark that I knew it was paranormal. As soon as I stepped foot in that house, I didn't have a good feeling. I felt it had a bad energy in there. I wondered if the ghost was angry at us for flipping the house and making a quick profit on it, but I'm not sure. I'd rarely go in there and help Donald work because I could feel it. I'd avoid going in to help. He laughed it up, and I thought it was something wrong with the cell phone, but the pictures were fine in other places, like the hallway. I've held on to these pictures, and they've always bothered me, so I posted it because I wanted to get some validation. I'm glad I posted it, but I wish I never saw the photos in the first place." Okay, I got to show you a couple of these pictures, Jess, before I go any further, because
all right,
these pictures are a little bizarre. Here, take a look at these.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
It's not just like a trick of light or anything like that. These are dark black blobs.
Yeah, those are definitely creepy.
Yeah.
For sure.
They're very creepy.
I mean, I usually kind of poo-poo photos just because, you know, there can be so many different elements at play. But I mean, the whole story with the previous owner mother dying in the house and.
Yeah. Mandy insists the images haven't been edited. She says she even showed them to tenants who rented the home following the renovation. After images show Donald's handiwork in giving the shell of a detached home a modern makeover. They sold the property for $100,000 a year later, but the images have been giving her chills ever since. Her Facebook post said, "My husband and I purchased a house to flip, and each time we do this, I will take before and after pics. Later, when I looked at all the pics that I had taken, I was shocked to find this dark black mass in three of my photos. I didn't see this black mass with the naked eye. It's so dark that it blocks part of the ceiling fan." And I had shown you two of them. You saw the one that was blocking the ceiling fan. Yeah. "The one coming out of the floor is the one that chills me, though." That was the other one that you saw. One said, "That's definitely something going on there. I get this really panicky feeling when I look at them." A second agreed and wrote, "Oof, I feel immediately dark energy from this. It's almost taking my breath away." A third wrote, "That's not a happy spirit." No doubt.
That's an understatement.
Right. However, not everyone was convinced. As one user suggested, it could just be a spot on the camera. Well, if it's only in three spots and then you go and you take pictures in the hallway, that's not a spot on the camera. I don't know how to tell you that. You know, I could see saying, well, trick of light or, you know, but spot.
No, there's so many elements at play when it comes to photography. Yeah. However, as a paranormal investigator, you also have to trust your intuition and your gut. You have to trust what you feel.
Yeah, that's those are some creepy pictures, that's for sure.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, and if I'm the husband, I don't know that I'm laughing it up over that either. You know, you're like, oh, ha, 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 ha. No, I think I'm getting a little creeped out as well. I'm converting that house over and selling as fast as I can, that's for sure.
Coming in there with my sage and doing a little sage-in.
That's right, little sage-in. Let's move forward onto another ghost story. A ghost hunter's hair is pulled inside a haunted house despite being told there's nobody behind you. How do you like that one?
I like it.
Katie felt her hair being tugged while at the 18th century grade one listed Merley House, rather, which was built in 1756 in Wimborne, Dorset, and said it. And it's said to be haunted, leaving the woman terrified. Well, it's haunted. I mean, wouldn't you expect that if it were built back then?
Isn't that what you went there for?
I think so, yeah. A woman's hair moved after it was pulled by a ghost in an 18th century manor house. The apparition is said to have pulled her locks in the historic Gregorian building as she was on a trip to hunt ghosts. Well, then why would you not think your hair was going to get pulled?
Come on, that would be like an answer to my requests. Pull my hair, slap my butt, do something.
Wow. Lucky ghosts. Katie was reportedly freaked out by the experience while on her first visit to look for ghosts. It happened on her first time, Jess.
What a lucky girl.
See? But within seconds of the hunt starting, she said she felt a tug on her blonde hair. That's always the blondes who have more fun. The eerie moment was captured on video and showed Katie's locks moving simultaneously. So they got it on video.
Very cool.
She turned around and touched the back of her head. Katie said to the group, "Something just touched my head." Another woman added, "There's no one behind you." Oh, God, it was a group of geniuses that was with her that day. Katie replied, "I swear something touched my hair." One man on the paranormal visit said, "When you said something touched your hair, how did they do it?" How did they do it? Oh, my God. The woman responded, "It felt like someone took a bit of it and really gently pulled it." Ghost expert Tony Ferguson filmed the bizarre moment. He said, "I've got the camera facing you, so it will pick up if anything's moved." The eerie encounter happened at grade one listed Merley House, which was built in 1756 in Wimborne, Dorset. Do we have a... Oh, there's a video grab. Okay, so here's the still photo of the video grab of her hair moving.
Okay.
Look at that.
Yeah.
It got a handful, that's for sure.
Yeah, good catcher.
Yeah. Oh, did it move on? I'm sorry, did it move on you?
No, you got it.
Did you see it? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I did.
Okay, all right. Tony of Lymington, Hampshire, a personal trainer by day, has been hunting ghosts for 15 years. He said, this is a location that I've wanted to visit for some time now. On the night, we had many skeptics, non-believers, and believers in the group. At the start, a member of the public who was on her first investigation was very nervous and had a piece of her hair pulled, he went on to say. He added, you can see it move on the left-hand side of her head. It was very dark. It was pitch black at the time. You can clearly see her hair was being pulled out. The group also claimed they heard bangs and children's voices in the 267-year-old building, which has been subject to previous claims that it is haunted. So that's the name of that tune, Jess. Hair pulling and kids crying, evidently. It's a heck of a haunted little house.
A pretty eventful ghost hunt.
That's right. So there you go on that one. With that, we are moving on. We have yet... Oh, this one's going to creep you out. Okay. So this was a major story in the paranormal this past week and has to do with a self-proclaimed ghost hunter in France, or from France, rather. This 22-year-old woman was found drained of her blood in an abandoned church, and locals spotted people dressed as vampires.
Ooh.
Yeah, she's actually kind of big on TikTok over in Europe. The decomposing body of Ariane Natalie, I believe it is Lazine, I believe it is, from France. I'm not quite sure on the last name. Was found by a hiker on April 6th at the deconsecrated church in northern Italy's Aosta Valley. And she had been drained of blood.
Yikes.
Yeah, this 22-year-old woman was found with the blood drained from her body in an abandoned church and had been looking for a haunted house containing ghosts before she died.
Oh my goodness, this is like the creepiest story ever.
Yeah. Ariane Natalie, I believe it is Lazine, I believe, from France, and a male friend were seen in the days before her death dressed like vampires, a witness said. Police have said they thought she may have been attempting to carry out a TikTok stunt as part of a ghost hunting competition currently underway in France on the social media platform. The other working theory, investigators in the Aosta Valley village of La Salle are reportedly looking into, is that it was a consented murder or sacrifice. Her decomposing body was found by a hiker on April 6th at the deconsecrated church in northern Italy's Aosta Valley. She had been drained of blood, and it is believed she had been dead for several days.
Well, that's a terrible story all the way around.
Yeah. In a police interview, a witness described the young woman in the days before her death, describing her as pale and emaciated, and the man had dark hair and olive skin. The witness told police investigators that she looked like a walking corpse. Medical examiner Roberto Testi said the young woman had been stabbed with what investigators say was a camping knife and had bled to death. She had multiple stab wounds in the neck and abdomen, as well as gunshots, oh my, to her neck and body. There were no signs of a struggle, according to police. Police said the shots could have been inflicted after she died. Some of the blood at the scene had reportedly been scraped off the floor and removed, according to police. They told that to CNN. The young man who had been seen with her was tracked down to Lyon in France on Wednesday night. The 21-year-old Italian man, Tama Sohaib, or Sohib, I believe it's Sohaib, was arrested on suspicion of murder and is now awaiting trial in the French city of Grenoble. I believe it's Lane. There's an S in here, so it's tripping me up. Lazny was found. It says was found a packet of pink marshmallows and groceries near her body. I think they found a packet of pink marshmallows near her body and groceries. Yeah. The crime scene was soaked in blood, and she had been wearing leggings, a jumper, and dark coat, according to police. The girl was from Saint-Priest, which is a town near Lyon, while Sohaib is said to be from the Marche region of Italy, but he had been living in Grenoble in southeastern France. Police stated that her death could be related to a hunting competition on TikTok, which is currently popular among young people in France.
Yikes, that's terrible.
That's kind of gruesome.
Super gruesome.
Yeah.
At least they got the guy, and I hope he, you know, confesses and tells them what the deal was.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, yeah. Awkward and strange. Because we don't, when we investigate here in the States, we don't tend to mix the occult with investigation. That's not how we do things. But in Europe, it's a different bag, a different game.
Yeah, it's just a lot of stuff going on. Ghost hunting, vampires.
Yeah, vampirism, the occult.
And a little side of murder.
A little side of murder and pink marshmallows. I didn't know that mixed, but maybe there's cocoa involved. I think the cocoa is actually part of the occult thing. I'm not quite sure.
Who knows? Vampires like s'mores. That's what it is.
Well, you know, when the hellfire comes up, it makes for a better flavor of s'more, I guess.
That's true.
I had no idea. So there you go. All right. Speaking of earlier in the show, we were talking about time travel. Let's talk about time capsules.
Yes.
You ever run across a time capsule?
I mean, not personally. I've run across them in my research.
Oh, okay. A man has uncovered a 111-year-old time capsule, but he's puzzled by an unusual item or items inside. When having some remodeling work done on his house, this man uncovered a 111-year-old time capsule tucked away in the walls. But he had been left with more questions than answers after opening it to see what was inside. The man's in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and believes the time capsule belongs to a child due to the collection of items that were found. It included a handwritten letter with an accompanying drawing, a copy of the Wellspring for Young People newsletter dated November 8, 1913, and a card that reads, "Compliments of Julius A. Friedrich, General Music Dealer," alongside the image of two children. That's an interesting little time capsule.
But that's weird.
Yeah, but that's not all, as he also uncovered another card, thought to have been taken from a board game, which reads, "Good luck, stocking on inside out." There's also a picture of Jesus Christ, a domino, a small skillet pan toy, a marble, two rods, and what is thought to be a homemade thumb piano.
Huh, a thumb piano.
Yeah. It's an odd little time capsule, but it's
quite a little collection.
Yeah. Sharing his discovery on Reddit, he said, "Contractors found a time capsule in my walls, Heritage Hill area. I'm doing some remodeling and found a kid's time capsule hidden in my walls, along with a few trinkets and a newspaper from 1913. I found this card. It looks like it could be from some kind of game. Does anyone recognize it?" Commenting on the post, one user said, "I can't find examples of the cards, but this might be from Milton Bradley's Game of Luck, which was published in 1890, which is with a question mark. The time period works. The description of the game meshes with the card, luck theme, simple trick-taking, etc. And the cards were known to be chromolithographed, which I suppose means color." Okay. Interesting.
Well.
Yeah. So there you go. Just kind of an interesting little time capsule. Another user added, "This is amazing. Amazing. Maybe contact the museum and see if they'll take it as a donation or if they have info on that person. Does the museum even do this? LOL, this is just so cool." A third user said, "Oh, wow, that's pretty cool. Makes you wonder how many of these finds are still sitting unfound. Thanks for sharing." One more user added, "The downtown library has an amazing local history section. They have information on a lot of Heritage Hills homes. I would recommend going to the library and looking up info about your house. If city indexes that list people by name and what their profession is, so many different resources, check it out. So kind of interesting to find some stuff from 1913.
So fun.
Do you have a thumb piano or no one? No?
No, I just thought it sounded really cute.
Yeah.
You got your picture of Jesus, you got your marble, you got your thumb piano.
And a domino. Don't forget about the domino.
Don't forget the domino. Just, that's right. And the weird card with the two kids.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of weird.
Just the one domino, though. You can't play a whole game of dominoes. You just...
It's like a little piece from everything he probably loved the most, which is kind of adorable.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just one domino, and you're like, domino, motherfucker. Yeah, you can't play a whole game with yourself, so there you go. I do, yeah, I suppose it's just little reminders of a time gone by.
Yeah, and it was really common back in the day to put stuff in the walls when they were building houses. My dad had an old farmhouse, and we would find things in the walls, newspaper clippings from the year it was built. What else do we find in there? A little toy. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I remember being so excited that we were finding all of these different things in the wall. But yeah, I think it was pretty common for them to put things in there as just kind of like, you know, we were here, we were building, maybe someone will find it someday down the road and be excited. And there'll be an article written about it. And these two people will talk about it on a podcast.
You want to hear something crazy?
Yeah, always.
Supposedly, for 200 years, the House of Tromelay, my ancestors,
yeah,
had the Shroud of Turin in their walls.
What?
Yeah.
That is wild.
It's the craziest thing I've ever heard somebody put in their walls. Just saying.
What'd they do with it? Is it still there?
Supposedly, it was given to that... This is just what I heard from a family source. And then it was given to the art dealer who eventually had it before it was given to the Vatican.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't have anything that interesting in my family history. Bootleggers and horse thieves.
That's just what I hear. I don't know what the validity of that is, but it was for 200 years. It was in the family.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Which makes me think your family was kind of like spies or something.
No, they were Templar. They were Knights Templar.
Well, I mean, yeah. But they were next level, you know? They were entrusted with that. Not just everyone got that stick in their wall.
Oh, I don't know. I think they passed it around Europe for a while. You know,
just, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Who wants to wear it? You know, stuff like that. You can kind of wear it around like a coat, you know? Just kidding.
Dress up in it.
Who wants to play Jesus this week? You know, it was one of those things, you know, like they put
use
on.
Use it as your apron while you're making dinner.
Yeah, you know, they put on plays and stuff, you know, kind of fun. Just kidding.
Wow. Oh, man.
How sacrilegious can you be after Easter, Jess?
Just a little touch, yeah.
I'm just saying. You know, people would take turns playing the rocks in front of the cave. Just saying, you know, it was, they had a whole production, you know.
Oh, Tim.
I know. Anywho, one last story here before we leave you today. You know, the solar eclipse last Monday was, it could have either been quite the thing to behold and people had a religious experience looking at it, or it was simply just another eclipse. Again, there's another one in 2 years. Just go to Iceland or Spain. Okay. But for one tiny little animal, it was... an event of its own. And here goes, Jess.
Okay.
A chicken donned tiny little glasses to watch the solar eclipse, and while doing so, laid its own egg.
What? It got so excited it laid an egg.
Yeah. We go to Arkansas, where one unusual solar eclipse spectator who watched the sun disappear in Arkansas is going viral for her particularly tiny pair of protective glasses and her feathered form.
So cute.
Tad Friendly of Amity watched the eclipse on Monday with his pet chicken Gertrude in his arms and wearing her own pair of eclipse protection glasses.
Gertie.
Fendley's sister, Carolyn Fendley Shell, snapped a photo of the scene and posted it to social media, earning Gertrude several new fans. Fendley told KTHV-TV that Gertrude was so excited by her first solar eclipse that she literally laid an egg during the event.
That's amazing.
The brother and sister said they attempted to outfit their cows with eclipse glasses so they could also enjoy the rare phenomena, but the animals weren't interested in donning eyewear.
Probably not.
No. Let me show you the picture here, Jess. It's just too rich. That is what a chicken with solar eclipse glasses looks like.
Gertrude, the cutest.
Gertie the birdie with a pair of glasses. And there you go.
What a great story.
There you go. Yep. Gertie the birdie laid an egg during the eclipse. That sounds like a kid's story, doesn't it?
I think it does. It reminds me of the time I took my dog Phoebe Buffet in to get her hair cut, and she got so excited, she pooped in my hand. It's kind of like laying an egg, right?
A little bit, except for that egg gets washed out of your hand eventually, and you know, it's not anything you can exactly hold on to.
All right, it's not the same at all, and it's not even cute, but Gertie is adorable.
Could have been a chocolate egg, you know what I mean? So that'll do it for today. Jess, what's new in your world?
Oh, just the same old, same old. Trying to keep up with my book deadlines, which is a good problem to have.
That is a good problem. Good problem to have. To keep up on Jessica, check out jessicafreeberg.com. We have a link in the description of this program. I am up in St. Cloud again this weekend. It's my normal weekend to be up in St. Cloud, KNSI. And tomorrow on the big program, Aaron Deese from Small Town Monsters will be here.
Oh, fun.
We'll be talking about Dog Man and a brand new book he has out. And actually, I think it comes out on the 23rd. And we'll be talking about the Land Between the Lakes in Kentucky and the unusual activity there. Not just Dog Man, but we'll be talking about Kentucky goblins. We'll be talking about Wampus cats. We'll be talking about UFOs and Sasquatch.
Going to be a good one.
Lots of stuff going on in that area. So we'll be talking about Aaron Deese and his new book. Folks, I'm almost done with it. And let me tell you, it is strange. And it goes over the entire investigation that they had going on down there in the Kentucky area, in the area that the TVA cleared out, because they had a lot of squatters in that. I shouldn't say squatters. It was generations of families that were there.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's boy, is it an interesting investigation and frightening all at the same time. So they're making a movie, a documentary out of it. The documentary will be out later this year.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I'm excited about this.
Yeah, so we'll have Aaron on tomorrow, and we'll talk about the book and about a little bit about the investigation, a little bit about the witnesses he interviewed, and about the phenomenon that's going on there in the Land Between the Lakes. So that's coming up tomorrow on the big show.
It's going to be a good one.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that'll do it for today's show. Thank you so much, folks, for listening. I want to remind you as well, keep patronizing those advertisers that help us out here on the show. If you have a question as to who those advertisers are, go to darknessradioshow.com. Just look at the bottom of the page there. You'll see their icons. Click on them to look at the deals you can get from them and help support them because they're supporting us. So there you go. For Jessica Freeberg, I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you so much for joining us here on the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.